All right. I want to welcome you to, I guess, what do we call this thing? The Harry and Barry Show outside the Beltway of healthcare?
I think we called it Outside the Beltway on Healthcare, Barry.
I think so. Yeah. Well, I realized that last time, Harry, we forgot to introduce ourselves fully. And my name is Barry Alexander. I'm a shareholder at Pulcinelli. I am a former just outside the Beltway guy. I lived in the great land of Lord Fairfax, and I specialize in Medicare reimbursement. I get to deal with the government, Department of Justice, when they knock on the door. Although, Harry, they generally just don't come in and say, hi, I'm here. Good to see you.
Yeah, they're not very congenial.
No, haven't had that. Yeah. And then I also handle M&A work in the healthcare space.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. How about you, buddy?
Well, Barry, my name's Harry Spiridis. I've been with the firm since 2010, with Pulcinelli since 2010. I am a senior policy person here at the firm, which basically means I'm a lobbyist. And I'm not afraid to say that I'm a lobbyist. That's what I do. I represent a number of different companies and represent those companies and their interests with members of Congress and regulatory agencies on the Hill. I started in this business as a staff person for a member of Congress. Before you knew it, it became three members of Congress that I had worked for. And I've been doing this line of work since 1998.
I love the fact that we've moved from lobbyist to policy.
Yeah, senior policy advisor.
Senior policy. That sounds
really
important.
Yeah, I'm a lobbyist, is what I
mean. By the way, where does that name Spiridis come from? I'm just curious. No, your last name, buddy.
Spiridis?
Yeah.
Spiridis is Greek, Barry. It's a Greek name.
You're kidding.
The full name is Harry Anastasios Spiridis. I am a first-generation American. Both my parents immigrated here in the 50s. And Alexander... What is Alexander?
Well, see, it's we were Polish, and the family arrived at Ellis Island, and they ask you what's the last name, Alexander Vich, and the guy apparently said you're Alexander. So there I go. What can I tell you?
Well, you know, it's funny, Barry, because if my parents had gone through Ellis Island, we would have been Pappas, because that seems like. Everybody that's Greek would become Pappas.
Indeed.
Alexander.
Harry, I just got to ask, man.
Yes, sir.
What is going on in D.C.? It feels like two trains are going down the same track, ready to collide with one another. We got an infrastructure bill that seems like it's just a wee bit behind. We've got a reconciliation bill. We've got, $4 to $5 million of stuff to get resolved in what?
Trillion.
Three months?
Yeah, trillion.
Trillion. I'm working on that.
Yeah. I know it's a hard number. Trillion.
Trillion. Say that. Trillion.
Yeah. No, Barry, there is definitely a game of chicken going on right now. There's no question about it. But the game of chicken that's going on is between the majority party and itself, right? You've got a couple of factions, or in the majority party right now, the Democratic Party, and there is a game of chicken going on. And right now, it seems like it's headed for a collision. Usually, somebody blinks and they go off the road, but on this one, I don't know if anybody's going to blink. But I can tell you this: in my memory, there is only one time I can think of where Democrats in block voted against a bill that was an important bill without their leadership knowing it was going to happen. And it was during the 1993 crime bill when the Congressional Black Caucus voted in block against the bill. And, Leader Gephardt and Speaker Foley, I remember it like it was yesterday. They were looking at each other with astonishment. They had no idea that was going to happen. And so we are in that kind of situation right now where I don't know at the end of the day, I think a deal is going to happen, but the question is, when will the deal happen? Every day that goes by makes it a little bit harder.
Well, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, we had infrastructure, you know, that was being pushed. God, I mean, back from, you know, the springtime at this point, all the way through the summer. I mean, it was supposed to be done so that we would move on to reconciliation at this point. Are these things going to collide in November and December? Or are we going to be jumping on top of one and the other?
Well, the Speaker of the House has made a commitment to the moderate Democrats of her party, of her caucus, I should say, that infrastructure bill is supposed to come up on Monday, that bipartisan infrastructure bill. But that was supposed to be tied in with the reconciliation bill. It was a trigger to kind of bring them together to force a vote on that reconciliation package. That reconciliation package is not nearly done at the moment. It's just not. So the question is, what will the Speaker do? Will she bring it up on Monday, on the 27th, as she had promised her moderate wing of her caucus? Now, there's a congresswoman from Washington State who is part of the Progressive Caucus, who has informed the Speaker that she has the votes to kill that bill. Because they want that bill to come up with reconciliation, the progressives do. So the Speaker is in between a rock and a hard place right now on what to do. And I think she would be depending on Republicans to vote for that bill, the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill. I was on the Hill. I was actually in the Capitol this past Wednesday. And I've never seen the Republican caucus as giddy as they were on Wednesday. They were excited. They were enthused, and the majority whip, or I should say, the minority whip, Steve Scalise, is whipping his members to vote against the bipartisan infrastructure bill.
You know, since you're talking about being on the Capitol, which I'm super impressed about, I think we should tell our guest the most exciting part being in the Capitol, and that is undoubtedly the cafeteria in the Capitol.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I would say the cafeteria. To me, the members' dining room is pretty neat because you actually see all these folks dining together, and that's pretty cool. The House floor to me is really breathtaking. It's just to see, you know, be up in the gallery and to watch that process moving forward is really, it's really impressive. No matter who's in the majority, it's really impressive.
You know, I was for edumacation, you know, which is part of our goal for our little podcast here. We appreciate everybody joining us. Oh, by the way, not just to interrupt myself, I wanted to let you know that I've been thinking about a new name for our program, and I was going down the pathway of trying to remember the great Tappet brothers and go with, you know, Click and Clack. But then the lawyer side of me said, well, we might infringe on some kind of trademark deal. So I've got a new name for us, Harry, and I want you to just try and embrace it. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm waiting.
Okay, it's going to be Duck and Quack.
Who's Duck and who's Quack?
Well, that's obviously the duck comes first. That's me. The quack comes second. That's you.
Well, then I think we should name it Pinky and the Brain.
Where does that stack me then?
Well, you would be first.
Oh, brilliant. Indeed. You know, another thing that just always fascinates me is like, the House ways and means, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, what does ways and means mean?
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. The ways, which is, you know, the legislative procedure, the legislation, and then the means, which is the money, right? So it's tax and bringing in the revenue. So it's exactly what it sounds like. And it's an extremely powerful committee. I mean, obviously, it's seen better days. I think, under, you know, a Chairman Ross Tentowski, for instance. It was a very different committee than it is today. But it's a really powerful committee that has a lot of jurisdiction. I personally am an Energy and Commerce Committee guy. The Energy and Commerce Committee is the only committee that's constitutionally mandated because the Congress is to regulate interstate commerce. And anything with an HR in front of it should go through the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
Yeah, of course, it doesn't always work that way. And I just want to prove to you also that I did a little research before today's call. And the House Ways and Means Committee was first established in 1789. So I think that feeds right into the notion that it is not a constitutionally mandated committee. And the interesting thing is, it was actually disbanded at one point in time. And then it was pulled back in and relaunched.
That's right.
So, yeah. So, but here's the thing, because we wanted to get to some healthcare stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about this last time, and I pulled up some of the language as it relates to dental expansion, optometry expansion, and
hearing.
Price reform, hearing. Yes, I'm working on hearing too. Yeah. Ask my wife. She'll tell me it's a long, long process. Probably not successful in the end. But Medicare expansion, Harry, this year, with all the stuff that we have going on, is that realistic?
Well, it is one of the crown jewels of this procedure, right? The Speaker of the House wants Medicare expansion. She had it in her previous bill in the last Congress. There was an HR 3 bill that would have expanded Medicare to include hearing, dental, and vision. It's again in this process. Bernie Sanders wants to see it too. Elizabeth Warren wants to see it in the Senate. So this is being worked on currently. Apparently, from what I understand, it's the dental that is causing some of the agita in this whole thing because of the expense of it. So they're working on the dental provisions right now. The House and the House Energy and Commerce Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee have already produced their legislation. Hearing and vision are part of that legislation, as is dental. But right now, the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate are, in essence, pre-conferencing this bill so that it'll be ready to come to a final vote at some point. So we're waiting on that right now, and I do think it's possible. However, yesterday, Senator Manchin of West Virginia came out and said that he does not agree with expanding Medicare. Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema of Arizona have been the two outliers for the Democratic caucus on the Senate side. So time will tell what ends up happening at the end of the day.
You know, it's interesting because I talked about this last time, and you know, my dad's a dentist, and I thought I would dive in and take a look. And what's very interesting about the legislation, at least as it's drafted, right? We don't know how it's going to flow through committees. It is somewhat of a limited benefit, and it's got a little interesting twist. I mean, it covers basic examinations, and by the way, they added fluoride. So that's, I feel very, very strongly about fluoride. So they added fluoride. They added basic crown and bridge work. I don't see anything regarding implants listed in it. And what was really interesting is that they want to have a competitive acquisition program for dentures.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and there are other competitive acquisition programs. We've seen that in the DME post space, but
it would place it in the DME category. So it would be competitive bidding under the durable medical equipment category.
Yeah, and that's and what's remarkable about that is it's such a different product class between DME and then dentures. And, you know, one can only wonder like how you would establish a competitive acquisition program, but I didn't see much detail in the legislation. I mean, that's not surprising in terms of actually how that would work.
Well, you hit on something there, Barry, is that there's never really a lot of detail. There's a lot of ambiguity in the legislation, and that's to give the regulatory agencies the ability to interpret the bill as they want to interpret it. And that's, you know, the regulatory agencies is like the islands of the unelected, right? You've got your elected officials that have to answer to their constituencies, and then they send it over to whether it be the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services or the Food and Drug Administration, somebody's Environmental Protection Agency, somebody is going to have to promulgate a reg, a rule, a guideline to interpret the statute and enforce the statute. And one thing that I always tell people is that, you know, let's take the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services as a good example. You've got people that are working at CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that have been there since it was called the Healthcare Financing Administration. They have seen administrator after administrator after administrator of that agency. And guess what? They're still there, and the administrator is not there that they started with. So these folks are, it is, like I said, the islands of the unelected, and they're able to promulgate these rules and interpret the laws as they see fit.
Yeah, I mean, to me, having followed physician reimbursement for way too many years, this is going to have to go through the Medicare physician fee schedule in terms of development. But unlike those of you who follow ordinary physician reimbursement with CPT codes and RVUs that have already been developed, I mean, this benefit is going to kind of start at ground zero, you know, as it works its way through the agency. Harry, you reminded me of something too along the side, and I think we're going to work on this between this podcast and the next one. You mentioned HCFA, Healthcare Financing Administration, and as Harry mentioned, that is the agency that is now known as CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And the question I have, Harry, and I'd like our guests also, if they know the answer, to please send in, where is the missing M? Why is it not CMMS, Medicare and Medicaid?
That's a good question. Well, that was back, you know, so it was renamed CMS in the Bush administration. That's when we were big on acronyms, you know, an acronym that can kind of, you know, be catchy.
And here's another historical fact. For those of you who have not been to the former HCFA building, they had a sign up and they changed it to CMS. That was kind of an exciting time. I remember going up to see the sign changed a few weeks later. It's on Social Security Boulevard. It's not in Washington, D.C. It's actually just outside of Baltimore. And the interesting history is HCFA, now CMS, was actually part of the Social Security Administration. And that's why it's on Security Boulevard. And actually, if you get off the highway and you make a right, you can go to the Social Security Administration. You make a left, you head to CMS. Anyways, I don't mean to get us all off.
So, but Barry, you were there. You were there to actually see the sign change.
Well, I was there a few weeks before and a few weeks afterwards.
You lead a really exciting life. Wow.
I know. And there's really exciting food by the way, Social Security Boulevard, if you should ever make the trek out there. Love to take anyone who wants to go.
I like how it all revolves around food for you, Barry. You know, you mentioned that the cafeteria in the Capitol, and now you're going to food at CMS. All right.
Well, we're doing this before lunch, and
I'm
probably just a little hungry at this point in time of the day. But you know, what can I say? So dental. What do you give it? How do you handicap dental?
How do I handicap that? They're working on it now, Barry. I can tell you, I know that they are currently drafting dental. They're going back and forth. It is extremely expensive. They're trying to find ways to get their arms around the expense. I think at the end of the day, when this reconciliation bill happens, I don't think it's going to be $3.5 trillion. I think it's going to be anywhere along the lines of $1.5 to $2.5, somewhere in that range. I do believe that Medicare expansion will be part of the bill. So I do believe it's going to be part of it, because this is something that the speaker wants. This is something that Bernie Sanders and the progressives want. So I think it happens.
I think what's going to happen, and I'm going to crosswalk over and we're going to hit our stop and we're going to ask you all to rejoin us on the next one. But when I looked at the dental legislation, you can see the cracks in terms of, are they going to pull back in terms of what is actually covered? And, you know, my experience in the history of the Medicare program, Harry, is that sometimes they roll out a benefit with a limited package and then they expanded over time. When I dove into the optometry bill, a couple of things struck me. I mean, first and foremost, they're going to cover eye exams, but only every 2 years.
That's right.
Yeah. And then the other thing that, and contact lens exams as well, and fittings, again, only 2 years. And I don't know about your eyes, Harry, but I sometimes these days, I don't even think I can go 8 months. Also, glasses are covered, but here's the deal based upon the current legislation: $85 for the frame and $85 for the lenses. For those of us who wear glasses, when's the last time that you've been able to get a progressive multifocal bifocal lens for, I have to do my lawyer math. Let's see here. I have to go to scratch at $170.
Well, that's right. So what they're doing is they're giving you the floor rate, $85, and then you can spend out of pocket for something better if you want to.
Yeah, but see, what I think is going to happen on that is I think that's going to create compression. I think it's going to be very hard for beneficiaries to walk into an optometrist and hear when they're running your benefits, you know, dear ma'am, sir, you only get $170. I think what's going to happen is it's going to put extreme compression on the industry to fit within those guidelines. Because I don't think folks are going to want to hear, oh, that's going to be an extra $100. It's going to be an extra $200. And what I see, what I worry about for our clients, for our clients' investors, is that there's going to be price compression. I mean, going back to dentures, for example, putting that up for competitive acquisition. I mean, that's never been done in the history of a physician service benefit. So it shall be interesting to say the least.
Absolutely. So, this is a very interesting time. And to say that I've never seen anything like this before is an understatement. But yet again, every day working in the world that I work in terms of the Congress and legislation, et cetera, every day is different. And I'm sure that, you know, 10 years or, you know, God willing, 10 years from now, I'll be looking at something that's going on saying, I've never seen anything like this before.
Well, the good news, Harry, there's plenty of work for policy folks.
That's right.
For reimbursement nerds like me.
That's right. But, it's extremely busy right now. There's no question about it. Extremely busy. Hey, Barry, can I correct something that I said in the last podcast?
Oh, as long as it's not something I said, then no, absolutely you can correct what you said.
I want to correct. I said in the last podcast that I was an art major in college, and I had a heavy concentration in art. I was one credit shy of being an art major. I never did the gallery exhibit at my college. So I just wanted to clear that up in case somebody was to come to me and say, you actually didn't major in art because you're missing a credit. It's true. I was missing a credit. So I just wanted to correct that. I was a poli sci major and heavy into art into the art stuff.
Well, I appreciate that clarification. And then since we're talking about college degrees, I have to put this out there, and I know this is crazy. I was a theater, communication, and then ultimately a philosophy major. That's where I graduated. And I'll never forget, I walked to my professor and I said, so what do I do with this degree? And he said, well, you only got two choices. He said, you can become a teacher or you can become a lawyer.
There you go.
And there you have it. All right, well, folks, I want to thank you for joining. This is Duck, aka Barry, signing off.
And so I guess I now have to be Quack.
You do. Okay. And you do it well too, by the way. All right. Thanks, folks. We'll see you on the flip side and pick up on some of the wild wackiness in Washington, D.C. soon.
Thank you, everybody.
We want to remind listeners that the choice of a lawyer and lobbyist is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertising. The information and discussions in this podcast do not constitute legal advice, and listeners should consult legal counsel regarding their specific subject matter. Thank you for listening to Inside Law, a podcast produced by Polsinelli.